Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
My garbage truck is right outside. It's like old times.
That's like the old days.
It's like with you and me and Clockwise, when it was like you and me and garbage and two guests and four tech topics all together.
You and me and, it's You and Me and Garbage was the original name of that show. Yeah. Most people don't know that.
I distinctly insisted that it'd be Garbage and You and Me. This is outrageous, says Garbage's agent, and then throws us out.
Yep, couldn't afford Garbage.
Yeah, the so Lauren had a dream about you and Kat last night. She
okay.
She dreamed that you were going on an adventure cruise.
Oh, that sounds fun.
But it was leaving from Woodbridge Lake, which is this little tiny man-made lake that is not connected to the sea. That's in Irvine, where she grew up.
That's the adventure.
But it had an as before undetermined, undiscovered tributary to the ocean. So you were going to be able to get it there. But unfortunately, there was no captain. And so you and Kat decided that you could handle it. It's like, is there a doctor on this plane? It was like, is there a captain on the ship? And Dan's like, yep, I got it.
I'm
or maybe
a podcaster.
Kat's
I
like,
this.
I got it. And Dan
yeah, more
could
likely.
Be first mate. Then you got to the ocean, but there was a gate, and everybody tried to lift the ship over the gate, and Lauren realized that it was too heavy to lift. And that was the end of that dream. So congratulations. You started a dream.
You.
And if ever anyone says, is somebody... a captain, you could, you know, maybe think about saying yes.
I'm here. I've done it. I have dream experience.
And it's funny because I'm reading, she had that dream, and then I was reading last night before we went to sleep about, I was reading a new book that starts out in Irvine, again, where she grew up. And there's a concert at the Irvine Meadows Amphitheater, which is a big... outdoor, you know, rock music venue in the 90s when this takes place. And then there's a, through a series of unpleasant incidents, somebody is killed and their body is dumped in that same lake, Woodbridge Lake, which is a very shallow lake. Not really a place where you'd want to hide a body, but that's what happens in the book. And I laughed because obviously the author grew up in that place at that time, just like Lauren did.
If it gets washed out in the unforeseen tributary, then, you know, that might help.
I know we should connect these things. What if the you put the body like in the ballast tank of the boat or something? Do they have those? I don't even know. This
sure.
one does.
Let's say yes.
You're the captain.
Let's say yes.
You should know.
I know. I put one in. I added it special.
You're the emergency captain.
The emergency captain.
Yeah. Anyway, that's that book, by the way, for I've spoiled the first chapter now, is The Future of Another Timeline by Annalee Newitz, which I started reading, which is thematatically very similar to another book that I read recently, which is This Is How You Lose the Time War.
Which is on my, I bought the other day, actually. I had volunteered at my local bookstore to be a bookseller for the day. And
I saw that.
I'm not sure how much I was helpful in that endeavor, but I decided I wouldn't leave them empty handed. So I bought a book on the way out.
Nice. Well, I liked her book Autonomous, which is weird. We did an incomparable episode about it because it was nominated for a Nebula Award, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. I thought it was very strange but good, and it's like biotech, and it's got a robot that's or like a cyborg or a robot that's in love with a human or something, and it was good. I liked it a lot. It was very strange, and it was like biotech cyberpunk, and that was a good one. Not everybody liked it, but I liked it a lot. So I'm reading her next one, which is like time travel again. It's like factions fighting for a timeline, which is kind of fun. I like that stuff.
Reading this has become a recently read, but
yeah.
I'm reading the third Theodora Goss book, The Strange Case of the Alchemist's Daughter.
I've got that on my Kindle, but I just haven't gone to it.
I like it. I've only got like 5 or 6 pages left.
It looks a lot shorter than the second book, which is good because the second book was way too long.
I think parts of this, again, I feel like there is some trimming that could happen, but it's good. I like it a lot. I enjoy these characters. I think she's done a really great job constructing this world.
And I want love this that to she be keeps... a. I want it to be a TV show, right?
Yeah, I keep Googling things to be like, wait, is that a reference to something else that I don't get? And yes, like every single character is from like, you know, Gothic Victorian literature.
Yeah, for those who don't know, this series is basically... Theodora Goss observed that a lot of the monsters in old, you know, old what we would call Victorian era science fiction, yeah, essentially, or fantasy, are a lot of those monsters are women. So if you think about like the Bride of Frankenstein, or and there's like a Nathaniel Hawthorne story.
Yeah, that's Rappaccini's daughter.
Rappaccini's daughter, who she's poisonous. She's like raised around poisonous plants and becomes poisonous. A woman who is poisonous and kills men she touches. I'm sure there's nothing psychological there, Nathaniel Hawthorne. Yeah. But anyway, so Theodore Goss takes all of these characters, two daughters of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, a whole bunch of characters like that, and they team up and they fight evil. Basically, it's great. Like it's and Sherlock yeah, Holmes is like a they consult with Sherlock Holmes. It's good. It's really good.
It feels very much like what, you know, Alan Moore kind of tried to do with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but this is League of Extraordinary Monster Women. Yeah, exactly. But flipped on its head, and I think it's a little more sustainable in some ways than that.
Right. And they're you know, literarily monstrous, but they're the heroes, and there's a vampire and there's a Frankenstein and there's all the things, right? It's all it's good. So I'm looking forward to reading that. Yeah, people should check out the first book in that series, cuz The Strange Case of the Alchemist's Daughter by Theodore Goss. This book club. You've been listening to book club. Yep. Well, it is actually getting toward the end of the year, where if we're ever going to write any lists of like our favorite things of the year, that books are going to come up. Yeah. This is end up writing stuff like that. I guess we should plan that now.
I have to remember what I was actually reading this year. I have to go. That's
25
why I do
days left.
That's why I have Goodreads. Yep. The only reason I update Goodreads is to remember books I've read. Yep. And this year I am apparently woefully behind.
It's my letterbox D.
Yeah, I
Goo D reads, I should say.
I use Letterboxd.
Yes, it's not a demon that runs in the background. It's Letterboxd. That's where
I was about to say that. Yep. I used it for a while, and I kind of fell out of practice with it. And as a result, I don't remember any movies I've seen for the last several years. But
yeah,
that's fine. I'll get back to it one of these moments. But Goodreads, I'm actually pretty good at sticking with. So that's... Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I need to go back and look over my list.
But I bought a bunch. I've been reading a bunch of lists of like favorites of the year and stuff. So and we did an Incomparable Book Club the other week. And I now have like 10 books on my Kindle to get through.
That's the problem.
Going into the holidays, it's a good time to do that, I think.
Yeah. All right. But it's always like the next year is always like, should I just spend the next year catching up on all the stuff I missed this year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel like that is unsustainable.
Since I always read the Hugo and Nebula nominees, I'm hoping that will be. I've taken care of some of it in advance being announced. That's always nice.
Yeah, that is handy.
So let's see what's going on this week. Let's start with you. You wrote a mackerel piece based on a thing that that came out this week that is hilarious, which is the rumor that Ming-Chi Kuo, anyway, says, the supply chain analyst, that Apple is planning a new iPhone in 2021, which will have no ports.
Yeah,
which means there's only one now. So which one will it be? It will be the Lightning port. It will not be. This was an upgrade question like a few months ago, which is, when will Apple go from Lightning to USB-C? And I said, I think it'll be soon. And Mike said, or they'll just, you know, remove it. And I'm like, oh boy. So the war on buttons continues, is what I'm saying.
Button/ports. Yeah.
Yep.
So this is part of it. I was sort of taking a look at a lot of these rumors. And as I commented this morning, like elections, next iPhone rumors start earlier and earlier every year. Because now we've got 2020 and 2021 rumors about the iPhone. Granted, we're still pretty far. You're pretty far from like a 2021 iPhone, right? Like it's in design current, like clearly. But it may not have been 100% locked down yet. So I think it's entirely possible that Apple is experimenting with a no port phone. Perhaps they have them even like test units that are out there where they're like, use this, see what problems you run into, see if this is plausible. But it may or may not end up being the phone that ships, because if they decide like, well, you know, we're not there yet, or this is too many trade-offs, then they might not go in that direction that soon. But it does seem like that's the direction they're heading. My biggest thought is, they've gotten as far down as like, you know, all the iPhones recently have had one port on them. The MacBook, you know, they had with one port on it for a while. There are things that you can do over a wired connection that are, you know, more useful than things that are like intrinsic things that are useful to do that you can't necessarily do as easily or as infallibly over a wireless connection. I'm thinking specifically of like diagnostics and things like that. But
yep.
I don't know if that would stop them. I mean,
yeah, the fact that there's one reliable way to fix a bricked iPhone,
yes, that's
a completely distressed iPhone, which is to plug it in. I'll also point out that if you have a drained iPhone and you're going to be somewhere with power or even on a battery for a brief amount of time, by using a wired charger, you can get that battery charged fast. And that's not the case with Qi
right.
charging.
It's slow still.
So there are a lot of issues that would make you say, like the new Apple TVs, like, and the Apple Watch is a great example, right? Which is like, good luck running a beta on the Apple Watch because you're taking your life into your own hands because there's no way to wipe it and restore it because it doesn't have a port. So, you know, I do. Okay. So let me throw out a wacky idea. I don't know if this is mentioned in your article or not, because I just woke up like half an hour ago, but I did mention this this story, and you were like, aha, that is my Macworld article. So it's like, good. We haven't written the same article yet, somehow. I don't know how. It'll probably be next week. What if Apple is working on something that would allow something inductive, something magnetic that would actually do a data connection in a pinch?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, that kind of exists. Like, you and Mike were talking about the Metro feature, the new Apple Pay thing where you can just tap your phone on the Metro card for London and some other places, and you mentioned like, oh, if it doesn't have power, even if your phone doesn't have power, it works. And that's because, you know, those types of NFC RFID chips, they can draw power, essentially, like small amounts of power from the reader when you tap them. So, like, you could do something. Like, they already can kind of do that. My biggest concern with that is one advantage of making wireless chargers more widespread is I have seen increasing numbers of reports, including mainstream media reports this year, about the dangers of plugging your phone into strange USB ports, right? Like, which is something we generally advise people don't do. And that's something that wireless charging, you don't have to worry about. My concern then would be, if you can transfer data over that, is there a does that open up security vulnerabilities as well?
Right. I mean, I mean, everything opens up security vulnerability. You just have to counter it. Like, Apple has put in all the whole idea of trusting USB things that provide data, and it's basically saying, in less technical terms, hey, this isn't just a power connection; it's a data connection. Do you want to allow it?
And right now, if you don't want to do that, you can always just go to plugging your phone into a wall like the standard way with a plug. But if you don't have a port,
or you
can
buy one of
that.
Those little dealies that just destroys the data connection and only supplies power.
That's what
I was going to say is the other way to go here is a non-hardware option, which is for Apple to re-engineer the boot system essentially of the iPhone so that there's a way to establish a connection at that base level and kick off an emergency reset, right? And that, I don't know whether that's, you know,
kind of like a recovery partition type thing.
Yeah, I was thinking like when you boot a Mac and it's in recovery and it's like, I need to find a network. Can you add me to your Wi-Fi network and things like that? Where it would be like not running the OS, but running a bootloader OS that is able to get on your network or connect to a Mac via Bluetooth or whatever it is and see a source and restore itself. The problems with that are, well, first off, you need to have that device around, but that's the case now. You need to have a device around that you can connect to, and it needs to be on the internet. So it's, you know, but at least there's a way to do it. You have to go somewhere where you're connected to the internet. But the other part is, it's a security hole, because now you've got a bootloader or whatever, an emergency reset, and this is where a lot of the jailbreaks come in, that is going to have network access of a kind, because it has to, and what does that mean in terms of security risk? Doesn't mean they couldn't do it, and in fact, I think if you want to go portless, that's probably the best solution, is to say, we need to be able to get this phone in a state where it phones home.
Right. And it makes sense in some ways, too, because, like, if you are someone who travels with maybe just your phone, doesn't have another device.
Exactly.
Like right now, if you break your phone.
Wouldn't it be nicer if something really, really bad happens and your phone is completely not working, if you could, anywhere you've got either a cellular connection or a Wi-Fi connection, that you could do a little dance and press a bunch of buttons, and it would be like, I'm going to call Apple, and the dance is optional.
Put your phone in the safe mode, Jason.
Yeah. So, you know,
a little command prompt comes up, you enter your username, you enter your password.
Love it. But I mean, right, it would probably like connect securely to an Apple server and say, I am in distress and I need to wipe and reload, and it would send it over the network and it would take forever, but you could potentially do it. But it's like, to do that, that's the stuff that comes up when I think about portless, like more than anything else. Because, you know, I don't transfer my big audio files via USB cable anymore to my iPad. I just use AirDrop. The only time that I really connect my devices, I connect my iPhone to a Lightning cable only when I need a fast charge or when I'm out and about with a battery, which is part of the other issue here too, right? Is like Qi charging is inefficient. And so external batteries can't really do Qi charging, and one of the reasons is because they don't work, they're slow, and you have to leave them on one another, which if you're walking somewhere you can just plug in a battery and then like keep using your phone and stuff, and you can't do that. So like I have, that's where my biggest skepticism probably is in things like recharging phones on the go. Like, do you really want to give up the ability to conveniently recharge, or again, are they going to invent a new recharging system, maybe magnetic, that is different, a MagSafe-esque thing that is going to be able to provide more power than Qi does?
Yeah, I think there's two things with this. One, like, I almost never plug in my phone to a wire cable unless I am traveling. The only other place I do it day to day is CarPlay. And there is a wireless version, I just don't have it.
Yeah,
but
I do
plug in my phone in the car.
Yeah, oh, that's
a
good
Bluetooth.
That's a good example. My CarPlay would not work with a portless iPhone either.
You'd have to find some sort of crazy adapter or something. The other thing, as you point out, you know, if they would have to invent something new, I wonder how much they want to, like, after AirPower and the debacle that was, part of me wonders, like,
how much
it's not that it was, you know, first of all, they ran into a lot of problems with that. It's not to say they're insurmountable problems, but it's clearly a very, you know, adding on features to that and doing things that are beyond what is currently available is clearly very challenging. I just wonder how much weight you'd want to put on that if it's your only option.
So let me counter. What if we are missing the obvious here, which is...
That doesn't sound like us.
smart connector.
Mm.
Smart connector. The iPad smart connector does not transfer a lot of power, but it does do a power transfer, and it does do a data transfer, and it's magnetic.
Yeah, so are the AirPods in their charging case.
Yeah, right. So smart connector, if you think about, like, what if the back of an iPhone had a set of smart connector dots on it? Wouldn't be a port. It would allow them to sell an adapter for something like CarPlay, right? So you could get a Lightning adapter. Boy, won't it be great when you have to magnetically attach a dongle to your iPhone that dangles a little female Lightning port. But go with me here. Like, that would be, people would do things like create a car dock for the iPhone 13, whatever, that was using the smart connector port. Like, it would be something like that. I could see them doing that, right? Because that's a path that they've gone down, and it's not a port. I mean, I feel like we're doing a lot of work to just get them out of a port, but it may be that their motivation is not, oh, ports are bad, we need to get rid of ports. It may be that they're like we are, frustrated that they can't make a waterproof iPhone, truly waterproof iPhone that they can warrant, and that the engineers are saying, look, if you get rid of the Lightning port, we can warrant that this thing will be waterproof. And they're like, well, okay, what do we have to do to get rid of the Lightning port? And then this is where we are, which is like, do you create a new smart connector? Do you change the boot system? Like, there's so many questions that stem from that. I hope that's their motivation, right? Like, I hope it's motivated by something that's very specific, which is the bad news is you don't have a Lightning port anymore, but the good news is we now will let you swim with your iPhone, and if it breaks, it's our fault, not your fault. That's a big upgrade.
Yeah. I think the trade-off is still, I mean, people were pissed off enough by removing the dock connector for the Lightning port. Or removing
and
the headphone jack.
Yeah.
I mean, both of those things caused an extreme backlash that probably didn't have like a, you know, bottom line, people still bought iPhones and stuff, but people were angry, right? And I can only imagine the frustration of people, again, having to buy new stuff. All the cords you have don't work anymore. You know, you got to go buy charging pads, you got to buy adapters. Like, is it enough of a trade-off is my question. And the answer is they're going to have to change it at some point. Nothing lasts forever. Either it's going to become USB-C or the port's going to go away entirely.
Right.
I think it's just the problem is it's a chicken and egg situation where it's like, well, certainly if you have a wireless charging phone, isn't it great if there would be wireless charging pads everywhere, your coffee shops, your hotel lobbies, etc., right? Like, and we've seen a little bit of that, but it's not super widespread. And the question is, in order for it to become widespread, does it have to be a world where that's the only option? And thus, if iPhones are now all wireless charging, then you're going to see a lot more places invest in wireless charging infrastructure because, you know, they have to, essentially. I don't know. It's an interesting question. But I think I'm sure that this is something that they are looking at. And I do think a lot of it is a question of a matter of time. How long it's going to be before we move into that future. 2021 seems both weirdly far away and like it's way too soon for this kind of change.
Right.
But it's not implausible. I would not be surprised if they did it. I would just be really interested in sort of the calculus they did to make it, you know, to come to a conclusion that this is worth all the trade-offs. Like the advantage, even the waterproofing, well, great. I'm not convinced it's worth all of the trade-offs that people are going to have to go through, but I'm not Apple. I'm not making that. That's a, you know, decision I'm making for myself, not for all owners of iPhones.
Yeah, I mean, you could make the argument that most iPhone users wouldn't care, and it would only be like particular specific cases that would need to buy an adapter. But are they going to ship a Qi charger in every box? They would have to. That's a lot of cost.
That's expensive,
right?
Yeah, especially again when we come back to the fact that they had trouble building one,
or would they just ship a USB-C charger and a magnetic dongle in the box if it's just like a smart connector or something like that,
the Apple Watch essentially.
Right
to just use the Apple Watch charger. Again, I don't know enough about the sort of, you know, voltages and
yeah,
like,
not I think not enough power, but
stuff,
they could ship like a little magnetic puck,
a larger one. Yeah,
that's not a Qi charger per se, or is, but it's different and it's just for the iPhone. They could do it. I don't know, it's weird. I think what's fascinating about this is it allows us who have seen Apple operate for a long time to look at this one piece of information and be like, all right, let's work this problem, right? Let's figure out what all the issues are that would be happening. I don't know, you know, what could they invent, what could they do, what makes it less likely, what makes it more likely, but it's a wacky one, right? Like and Ning-Chi Kuo is usually pretty correct about this stuff, although Apple could change it.
Yeah, I mean, just to add another wrinkle in there, because you mentioned the magnetic stuff like the Apple Watch. I mean, the Apple Watch doesn't really use Qi charging right now, right? Like it doesn't work on a standard Qi charger. Most of the things that you have to connect it to like incorporate the Apple charger.
Yes, Apple Watch is not Qi. It is a different thing. So they can make
like a
Qi capable iPhone with a totally that also supported a totally different standard that was theirs.
I wonder too if how compatible those two technologies are, like just from a physics standpoint.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. It seems like it could be a difficult engineering challenge.
And redundancy takes up space, which they don't want to take up.
Yep.
So if they have
and
to create two of them.
And it falls back to the air power thing again, since that was designed to accommodate both of those. And
well, it comes
maybe
back to air
that
power.
Was part of the challenge. So, yeah, well, I mean, you know, Apple is not a company that often admits failure, but like has that kind of public failure, right? Even though it was a small type of product, and you know, the fact that they announced it and they couldn't deliver on it, that's pretty rare. I would say that is something that only happens, you know, maybe once a decade or something for a company the size of Apple, that it's something gets to the point of being publicly announced and then gets pulled back. So, you know, when you have that kind of example, I think you end up referring back to it a lot because it is the you know, exception that proves the rule, or the rare misstep. And since it's related to this kind of field, I think it's interesting to look at it and say, like, well, this was an area where they had a pretty bad failure. Are they willing to go back to the well on that point and sort of say, like, well, no, this time we've really solved it? I don't know. Maybe that's only inspired them to work harder, but I think it seems risky.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun to talk about, at least.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would be interesting. It would give us a lot of fodder for things to discuss. But, you know, and it's one of those things where you do wonder, like, where are they going? I got one of the other things I mentioned in this article was, so I was covering sort of a bunch of rumors that have come out in the last few weeks. And another one was the idea that Apple is going to use one of those under-screen fingerprint readers, the ultrasonic ones that some of the Samsung phones currently use. And have phones that have both Face ID and some sort of fingerprint reader. I'm skeptical of this report. I think the biggest issue for me is why. You know, they spent a lot of time touting how well Face ID works and how much better it was than Touch ID, which is not to say they couldn't turn around and say, we've got an even better Touch ID now, but there has to be a compelling reason to do it. And I think the use cases where Face ID doesn't work are fairly small and getting smaller. Like, again, to Mike's point about the subway thing, that they just found another way to deal with a problem that Face ID had, right?
Which is harder, adding a Face ID sensor back to an iPhone or widening the field of view of the camera so that if you're holding it at a weird angle, it can still see your face? I mean, your camera and the projectors and stuff. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm asking the question. Like, I feel like maybe it's the other, but I just think it's non-intuitive. Like, maybe the answer is you put a different set of sensors, or you have them hit a wider range, and you say, like, now if it's tilted at an oblique angle, we can still identify that it's you. Versus having to put in a sensor. If the sensor is a better experience, then they could do that too. But it seems like it would need to really be a huge benefit for them to go in that direction.
Yeah, and I think there are a number. Yeah, there are a number of cases where I think Face ID is unequivocally better. I mean, there are people, for example, differently abled people for whom Touch ID was not an option, for whom Face ID probably works.
Yep.
I think that's less common for Face ID the other way around, but, you know, I'm sure it still happens. I think putting in the same reason they pulled out 3D touch, and that was another technology that needs to be layered into the screen in the way that this ultrasonic fingerprint reader kind of needs to be, makes me wonder about how much time and money they want to spend on that, as well as taking up space inside the phone. I mean, like, that is a huge concern. You know, part of if they're thinking about getting rid of a port, at least part of it is because it will also free up room inside the phone, because that's just valuable real estate. And the more space they have, the more battery they can put in, the more, you know, other stuff that's more, more about how well the phone works can go in there. So I think they have to weigh very carefully every time they're like, well, does this add weight? Does it take up volume? Like, what are we really getting for those trade-offs? And for me, I feel like the fingerprint reader, it would just be a box that gets checked. Like, okay, we've got it. I'm not sure it's something that actually solves a problem.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
I don't know.
We'll find out.
It's mysterious.
Sooner or later.
Yeah.
It's, well, we're December starts getting a little quiet.
Yep.
This is the time of year when we just sort of speculate wildly about things that might happen at some point in the future.
I could mention this at least before we go, which is there was a little kerfuffle. Like, Brian Krebs is a security reporter, and he's really paranoid because that's his job. Was like, wait a second. This iPhone is, I turned off location services because I don't want anyone to know where I am, and it's still trying to figure out its location. And they're like, what does Apple have to hide? And then people did analysis of the traffic on the phone, and they're like, that information is not being sent to Apple, so what's going on? And Apple gave a response that was like, we don't use that information and it doesn't come to us. And it was like, what are you hiding, Apple? What are you hiding? And then, you know, a day or two later, Apple, having probably internally researched what the heck this was, did release a statement. I think, tellingly, it seems to have released the statement to TechCrunch and not Brian Krebs. I don't know if that actually happened. That seems to be what happened, like, little thumb in the eye of Brian Krebs. But basically what they said was, ultra wideband, which I wrote about, the technology in iPhone 11 that lets you do like nothing particularly interesting right now, but will probably let you do more stuff in the future. It's apparently not regulated or not approved in some countries, is what I'm getting the sense of, or in some locations in some countries. And so basically, iOS is using location services to decide if it's in a place where UWB should be turned off, and then it turns it off. And they said, so we will, you know, we're going to add a setting, because that's how Apple responds to stuff like this, is they say they'll add a setting. I assume they're going to add a setting that'll let you, you know, completely turn this off, and it'll say this will also turn off ultra wideband, and, you know, because they have to do both. And that whether they call that an ultra wideband setting or whether it's in location services, like really, really turn off location services, I don't know. But it's a funny little thing where did we all care? Did we all need to know this? I think it shows that it's good. Security people are keeping their eye out for ways that different companies might be abusing things like location privacy, but in this case that's not actually what's going on. But it's you know, paranoia can be healthy, but it also can lead to things where you're like, what is Apple not telling us? And the answer is something boring and not technical, something boring and technical involving regulations.
And I think part of it is also just the idea that well, in this place, in this example, it's particularly kind of head scratching also too, because just most people don't know what ultra wideband is.
Sure.
Most of the phones don't have it, and most, like, even the people who have the phones that have it have probably never really used it.
Right. Well, I mean, if they've
only in one place right now.
Yeah, if they've airdropped it with a different iPhone 11, then they've seen it, and that's it right now.
Right. And it's, I felt like maybe some of the initial reticence for them to discuss it was the fact that, you know, we've all speculated that those location tag things are coming, and Apple like initially was like, oh no, this is more people trying to dig up information about our location tag stuff. We don't want to talk about anything. We'll just be really cryptic because that's how we do things. And then realized that was not just, it just wasn't helpful. So yeah, I mean, in the end, it was not a big deal.
No.
I think they said they're adding a toggle in the future. So whatever, it's a solved problem. Let's move on to the next thing.
Yep. And another link I posted yesterday that I'll just mention for people who like this kind of thing. And I don't know, it's a sports thing, but it's also a tech thing that, and a science thing. So hopefully some of you, if you haven't seen it yet, you could check it out on the site, but I linked to two articles. Primary article is this article by a guy who is, his title is baseball scientist. he works for Major League Baseball. And what it is, and it's got applicability beyond sports, but I think sports is a great place where it's being used. Anybody who has watched a baseball game recently knows that they have these instant strike zone things where they show you, sometimes in 3D, where the ball passes through the strike zone. Because if the ball passes through this space, this volume that goes up, for those who don't know, volume that goes up from home plate in baseball, if the ball passes through it and is between a certain couple of height levels, like there's a volume in which the ball is called a strike, and that's bad for the hitter, and there's if it's outside that volume, it's a ball, and that's bad for the pitcher. And that's how they make sure that the batters get things to hit. Anyway, I just explained baseball. So how does this work? One, and the answer is that there are all these cameras and computer systems, and they have a tracking system, and they track everything on the field in 3D. And the other thing is, how do we know that it's accurate? And this comes up because now that everybody on TV sees that the umpire called it a strike, but it was actually a ball, the fans are like, that's outrageous. Why don't we replace the umpires with the computers? And there's a whole movement to do that, and I support that. I think that what we've learned with all this technology is that it's not the umpire's fault. It's like human beings and where they have to position themselves, like where their eyes are and how fast our brains work, cannot accurately measure the speed, you know, the location of a 100-mile-an-hour pitch in three dimensions. They can't do it. So in the end, computers are going to have to do this. But one of the arguments against that is, how do we know that it's actually accurate? It doesn't look accurate to me. I'm not sure I believe it. And that's why this article is cool, because this article talks about an organization that's out of Washington State University in Pullman, Washington, the Sports Science Lab. And they actually go around to all major league ballparks once a year, plus whenever there's equipment change and occasional spot tests. and they do this thing called ground truth, a ground truth test. And they set up a camera that runs at 2,500 frames per second and a calibration system so that they get their dimensions right. And then they have a pneumatic cannon that fires baseballs at 95 miles an hour. And they shoot at 2,500 frames per second the baseball tracking over home plate and use that to get an exact detail of the trajectory of the object and match it to the in-stadium system. And that's how they can tell whether it's accurate or not and adjust it if it's not. And I thought that I wasn't aware that this is how it worked. I thought it was kind of fun. It's an interesting application of technology and science trying to figure this stuff out. And then I also linked to a piece on ESPN by Sam Miller, which was posted yesterday, which is all about breaking down the contents of a single play. And he's looking at it from a perspective of like who gets the statistical credit from it, which as a baseball fan, I'm fascinated by. But what I also think is very interesting about it is he's using positional data, which we have now. So for every play, not only is the ball being measured, but like the locations of the players on the field are tracked over time. So in a certain play, you can generate a diagram saying this player went here and this player went here. We know the speed at which they move. You know, we know all of this detail about everything that's happening on the field. And that's all happening because of technology, because there are computer vision systems that are shooting the field and there's a radar system, you know, and they are amalgamating that data and generating this stuff. And I just think that it's pretty cool. It is definitely changing how fans and players and management in sports, not just baseball, in all sports, have completely changed how they view the right way and the wrong way and how to, you know, to do things and how to judge players and how to strategize. And in the end, it all comes back to computers again. It's the computers and the cameras that are processed by the computers that allow this whole thing to happen. I just think that's cool. Even if you don't like sports, I think that's I think it's fascinating that computers have just changed every corner you can think of the world because of the raw processing power that they can bring to bear on something like where is a baseball?
Yeah, I'm swearing off baseball until they have robot pitchers and robot batters.
Pneumatic cannons,
just all
Dan.
Robots.
They've already got it.
Yeah.
Pneumatic cannons
and robot and batters. That's the game I want to watch.
I would like to see a robot baseball game. That would be like a great season of Robot Wars where they have to like come up with a computer vision system that's attached to a robot batter and it's trying to calculate the best way to hit the ball. And then the robot pitcher is imparting different spins on the ball to try and confuse the robot batter.
I just want to see the blooper reel from that game. That sounds amazing.
I think generally what's going to happen is that the pneumatic cannon's going to fire at 400 miles an hour and destroy the robot batter.
I'm here for
little
that
chin
too.
Music for the robot batter.
I am here for that.
Yeah, but it's fun. I don't know. It's
cool
just
stuff.
I was thinking. So this is totally unrelated, but actually related. Which is, I was thinking today about how my dad's office. So my dad was an orthodontist, and I was thinking about like even in the 90s. Their entire, basically, it didn't seem weird at the time, but it seems very, very, very weird to think about it now. There was not a computer in my dad's office, even in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And I go to offices now and like, I mean, how could you not have a computer? But like, they had a paper book that was their calendar. They had a typewriter. They would type up the schedule of the patients for the day. They had a big folder system for all active patients A to Z, and you'd pull out a drawer and there would be their patient record inside, and you'd pull that and put it in the tray for the day. When they went inactive, they got their retainers or whatever and they weren't coming in regularly, they got filed in a different place alphabetically that was not quick access, but you could get to it. It was like a big filing cabinet. And I just thought about that, and I just thought how funny it is that in my lifetime, you know, and not that long ago, 25, 30 years ago, you could run a complete business with all these patients and everything and just not have computers. And it was just like, it's fine. I mean, you could do that now, but you couldn't do that now. And it's just another example of how it's related is just one of the things for our lifetimes. If we look at our lifetimes, that has transformed the world is the existence of the computer, like, not because there's the question of like what could you do with it, and the answer is literally anything, because all it really is a programmable information system, and it has wormed its way into everything, including things like, you know, where a baseball player should stand.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. It's
just, think of it. It's like hard to find a place. I'm sure, like, if you're a dairy farmer, I'm sure that you have a computer system and you may have, even if you don't have like automated like machines to milk the cows or something, I'm sure there's software.
Because there's
a lot.
Keep logs.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff in agriculture, especially that is like, you know, analyzing the fields. Like I don't know if they're like tracking the cows and like where the cows should go and where the cows shouldn't go or whatever, but like, I just made that up, but it's like, it's stuff like that you'd think like no, that's not going to be necessary. And I'm sure in the earlier days people would resist, because that's always what happens. It happened in baseball too. It's like no, that's silly, we're going to do it the old-fashioned way. And then the people who aren't doing it the old-fashioned way start beating the pants off of you, and you're like, I need to do it the new way too, or because they're doing it more efficiently than I am. And that's just like computers, they get everywhere. They're like sand.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, silicon too, they're essentially they are sand. They're rough and they get everywhere.
Except we like them?
Yeah.
I guess we like them. Yeah. I mean, they have good sides and bad sides.
I like computers and I hate sand. So that's perfect.
Yeah, that works fine.
All right, well, December, we have to do this again next week. Maybe something will happen. Or not.
Nah.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Apple held some award shows. I have nothing to say about that because it's just Apple picking winners. Like, it's the People's Choice Awards, except it's the Apple's Choice Awards. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't care.
No. They gave Billie Eilish a silicon record. Everybody was talking about that. That was like, oh, it's this thing, and I thought that's weird. And then they showed how huge it was, and that they were handing it to her, and I said, oh, it's the size of a gold record.
Mm.
Oh,
but silicon,
because it's from.
See what we did there?
It's chips that didn't pass the test in our factory, yeah. And so we cut them in circles and gave them to you, or maybe they came in circles. I don't know. Anyway, all right. Well, thank you to everybody out there for being a subscriber. We appreciate your support, and until next week, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.